You're listening to Alumni Aloud, a new podcast by Graduate Center students for Graduate Center students. In each episode, we talk with a GC graduate about their career and the advice they would give current students. This series is sponsored by the Office of Career Planning and Professional Development at the Graduate Center.
This is our final podcast episode for the semester, and we thought it would be interesting to talk to a GC graduate who is still teaching at CUNY. In this episode, I sit down with Richard Osejo. Richard got his PhD from the Graduate Center in 2009, and he's now an associate professor of sociology at John Jay College. In this episode, Richard talks about what it's like to make the career jump from graduate school to a tenure track position, how to think about your professional development over the course of your PhD studies, his top tips to help you stand out on the academic job market, and how to hack your productivity in any job, whether it's academic or non-academic.
Yeah, my name is Richard Osejo. I'm an associate professor of sociology at CUNY, primarily at John Jay College, and I'm also at the Grad Center where I went.
So that's an interesting case. You've gone to the GC for graduate school and teach at CUNY. Managed to stay in New York. All of that has worked out very well, it sounds like.
I tried to leave. They wouldn't let me.
Yeah.
So here we are.
And so can you tell me a bit about your journey of how you came into that position?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the short answer is that they gave me a job. When I was done with grad school, it was just an open position I saw that I applied for toward the end of my grad school, and you know, it was the only one that came in offer. So really, I just stayed within it. But I had always had the intention of staying within academia. So that was the position I was in that I laid out for myself.
That's great. You hadn't been teaching at John Jay, so it was a fresh opening for you.
Yeah. I taught at other CUNY schools, but John Jay I didn't really have any experience with.
Where had you taught before?
I taught at Brooklyn. I taught at Bronx Community College. I was a writing fellow at BMCC downtown, and I taught at Pace, so not at CUNY, but in private school downtown, also downtown. Oh, and I taught at College Staten Island once,
right.
so I did the rounds.
Had a lot of CUNY experience.
Yeah, I had a lot of CUNY experience, except Queens, that eluded me. It always has.
You'll get it one day.
One day I'll get it.
And can you tell me a bit more about your background? You went through the sociology program here at the Graduate Center, and you graduated in 2009?
Yeah.
And you said you always really were intending to go into an academic track.
Yeah. I think even when I didn't even know exactly what that meant, I knew that I wanted to go to grad school to stay within academia. I think I liked scholarship. I liked the professor life. I liked higher ed, so I think I wanted to stay within it in most likely a professorial capacity. So I think that's just the track that I put myself on from the outset in the sociology program at the GC.
What's your research about?
Broadly, my research is about, I'm an urban cultural sociologist. I do community studies. I've studied work. I study economy. I'm primarily a qualitative scholar, so I do a lot of field work and interviews. And then my research has been on more specific topics like urban growth, gentrification, community conflict, cultural change, transformations at work, economic transformations, and in general. And now I'm doing a study on a small city growth and developments.
Other than the small city aspect, New York would be a perfect place for you to pursue your research.
Yeah. And it was a smooth transition for me in the sense that I did my field work in New York, and then I was able to stay here and continue working on that project that turned into a book, while also continuing to work on another project I had started as a grad student that became another book later on. So I lucked out a lot by not having that break, right? I didn't have to like put down roots somewhere else and figure out the lay of the land somewhere else. So that was a big benefit for me. That was luck, obviously, but it was really helped me out.
What's a typical day like, if there is such a thing?
My favorite part of it is that there is no typical day, I guess. Every day is very, very different, which I like, because I learned pretty early on in my life that I did not like routine, a routine that I didn't create, I guess. I didn't like doing the same thing every day. I didn't like having to go to the same place every day, and I didn't like being told what to do. So That's why academia worked really well for me. I could make my own schedule, more or less. And at some point, I have to go somewhere to teach or do something. But for the most part, I could do it all myself. So, but I guess, you know, a really, really general, typical day. I mean, I get up very early. I have a small child, too, so this helps. But I get up at like 5 or so and get some writing done for about an hour. And then, no matter what happens during the rest of the day, I know that I did an hour of writing.
Yeah.
And I try to come back to it later on. But then I'll get my daughter's stuff ready, you know, for school, and I'll bring her to school. And then I'll usually either go do field work, these days do field work, do interviews, or go to a cafe or a library near my home to write, to read. But it's different every week. It's different every day. Yeah, and in many ways, it is a much more enhanced version of the grad student's life, I would say. You're juggling a lot more things, a lot more responsibilities as a faculty member, but you're kind of being groomed to do so at grad school. And I think CUNY does an especially good job of that. Well, I guess it's like making virtue out of necessity, because CUNY students teach a lot. CUNY students have side gigs, you know, really to make ends meet. But in many ways, that could help them out later on down the road, because they have proven that they could do it, that they could conduct their own research, follow through on a project while also teaching a course or two, maybe even a course or two at two different colleges, you know, and while also tutoring or something, or whatever it is, whatever kind of side project they have, while also contributing to their department on a committee or something like that. So that's more or less in a nutshell what the academic's life is. So it was pretty good for me, at least, and I think in general for CUNY students, it was really good training. It was really good prep.
How are the responsibilities of being an associate professor similar or different from being a graduate student? And you mentioned there's also more responsibilities in addition to the research and teaching.
There's a lot more in the sense that your discipline asks more of you, and you're more involved in your discipline, if you want to be, I guess, but I am. You get involved with your professional associations. In the American Sociological Association, we have sections, and they're all themed around different, you know, subfields. And so you can get involved or not involved as much as you want, or be a member or not a member. But if you become a member, the more advanced you get, typically, the more you do. So you're on committees for stuff like that. Help mentor students from around the country. I'm working on a few pre-conferences for our annual meeting. I'm doing a mini conference at one of our regional sociology conferences, one of the big ones in the East. And you do a lot more reviewing of, you know, articles and papers and manuscripts and book proposals, and people start to call on you a lot more to help out, to read over stuff, to look over manuscripts, to look over drafts, to mentor students. People funnel some of their students to you if they're doing research that's related to your own. So when your name gets out there a little bit more, then, you know, people come to you. So that's a big difference. That takes up a lot of time.
And it's obviously important to cultivate those relationships and service and the goodwill for one's career.
Yeah, I benefited from it as a grad student. Some senior folks who would, you know, just talk to me or mentor me or read over a draft that I had or something like that. So this is pretty much growing into that role, you know, and that's part of the job. Again, you don't have to do it. It's not like you get paid extra or anything for doing it, but this is what the job means, I guess. This is my definition of the job, I suppose. And it pays dividends down the road, you know. You get, you know, people will do you favors and look after a student of yours, or they'll read a manuscript you have, like a draft, or they'll invite you to come give a talk at their school or something like that. And, you know, a lot of people benefit from that. So
it's not always made explicit to students to think about cultivating those relationships early also in the program.
That's really important. People say that conferences are all about networking and stuff like that, but that's really true. That's mostly what it's about, is meeting other people, networking, even other graduate students, you know, just meeting anybody you can who has in any way something that's related to what you do or that you find interesting, and making that effort to get your name out there, right, in some way. It's really important. It's big. It can be tough to do in a material sense, to, you know, go to different conferences to afford it, let's say. It's a social practice, right, to just go up to people and talk to them, but it can pay dividends if you want to stay within academia.
That's a good perspective. I know a lot of people don't like networking, but seeing it as a practice is, I think, liberating. These are just social norms.
Right. Or even people who are good at it, who do it well, say they don't like doing it, so, and they hate doing it and stuff like that. It's one of those things that it's cool to say you don't like it. But it's just one of those things. You learn, you pick up on it the more you do it.
Are there other responsibilities university side services might be asked of you to perform once you have a position?
That varies a lot. I have colleagues who have very, very strict service requirements almost from the jump when they start in their first tenure track job. And then I have colleagues who are the opposite. They don't have to really do anything, or they're very sheltered. They're protected by some of the senior folks in their department because they know that from when they start, it's more important to start publishing, start starting a new project, start kind of distancing yourself from the student record. And then a ton of people fall in between. So it's a real mix. I mean, my own experience, I think I did a decent amount of service when I first started. Some of it was pretty light, and then some other service roles I had were kind of heavy in hindsight that I maybe should not have done. The best thing to do is to keep in mind if you're going to go that route and you do get an academic job, to just be aware of it and to not overextend yourself, and to realize that it's going to be more important that you publish. Your record is going to be judged far more on that aspect than it will on the service aspect, probably. I mean, every institution is different, every program is different, every department is different, but for the most part, you can get bogged down by it, for sure. And you may not have senior folks looking out for you, but you might also. So, I mean, it's just something to be very conscious of.
Right, I can see that it could potentially be overwhelming.
I lucked out. I got a job in the same city. I didn't have to leave. I didn't have to switch apartments, you know. But if you just finished up, you know, a month later, you're packing up your bags to move to a new city or a new rural area, or a new state or whatever, start this new job, and now you know the service responsibility, and you're adjusting to life there, and you're figuring out the traffic patterns, and maybe you got to buy a car for the first time, maybe you got to, who knows, you know, your first year is pretty much spent orienting yourself to this place and this new lifestyle and this new role you have. So, you know, if you're on a tenure clock, you might have just burned your first year not publishing anything because you had too much service to do on top of adjusting to life, to your new life, you know.
Yeah.
So just a caution to be aware of. And that's fruitful, too, to do committee work that's going to get your name out there in your academic community, at your college or your university, to meet people, to introduce yourself to colleagues in other disciplines. And that's valuable because you're going to have to interact with those folks too. And at some point, they're going to be evaluating you and your record. Mm-hmm. So it's good for them to know who you are to a certain extent. But that said, you may want to pump the brakes and not, you know, give up so much of yourself and your time to something like that, you know, especially as a newcomer. So it's a balance you got to figure out at some point.
So what do you enjoy the most about your work?
Reading. I love that. Yeah. I get paid to read, to be a professional reader. I mean, I have to write, but I don't especially like writing. I just do it because it's part of the job. I like teaching. I like interacting with colleagues. But at the end of the day, I think my favorite part is to be by myself and reading purposefully. Very few jobs that pay you to do that.
What about some challenges or frustrations on the other side of that spectrum?
I guess there is, and this is something that I think the Grad Center also really equipped me for, is that a big challenge is the amount of self-direction you need to do this job and to do it well. Is that nobody's mapping out a course for you or a path or anything like that. I have some friends who went to other PhD programs in sociology, and their programs were very structured, and they're a lot more structured than ours was. In the sense that you get put with an advisor relatively early on, early stage in your career as a grad student. Perhaps you publish with that person. Perhaps you work on their projects. Perhaps your dissertation is an offshoot of their project, or at least falls under that umbrella. And you have that guidance. You have that direction. And then after that, once you're on your own and you don't have all that support then and all that structure and guidance, then you could be a little bit lost. And I have some friends who struggle with that. A few years out of grad school, they just struggle a little bit to find their own way and to find their own identity and to kind of chart their own course. The program in sociology is a bit looser than a lot of those programs, so you had to really chart your own course. And charting your own course was very much encouraged in the program, which is both exhilarating and liberating, but also very terrifying,
right?
Because you don't have that anchor, I guess, or you know, you don't have that map. That's really kind of, you have to like kind of figure it out for yourself and piece it together.
Yeah.
But that cultivates a sense of self-drivenness that I think is important. That's a challenge for this job. You know, you could wake up in the morning and your day could be spent doing nothing,
right.
Or get up at 5 a.m. and you write for an hour, yeah. And then you make sure you cover this and this, and then you save emailing for this hour. So the self-discipline that's involved in it, but you have to keep that up. That has to be, that's like a muscle. You have to like work it. So one, you have to cultivate it, and you have to keep working it, because it can get stale, and you can get lazy, and you can just stop doing it, and then it kind of becomes a little meaningless, or,
yeah.
You know, directionless and aimless and not very fulfilling.
I like how you framed it as a practice, as a muscle, as
yeah.
a way that you just sort of organize things to work to your benefit, and everyone has their preferred way to do that.
I mean, yeah, it's a discipline. It's a practice. You, it's a job. You got to do it. So you got to figure out what works for you. You know, not every. I talk to friends about what I do. They're like, I can't get up at 5. I'm like, then don't get up at 5. Just do something else. You know, just
yeah.
whatever works. You know.
Are there any other things that spring to mind? Frustrations or things that I know a lot of people would say grading?
Well, one challenge, I guess, for grad students is learning how to juggle multiple scholarly responsibilities, because CUNY students are good, like I mentioned, at juggling different overall responsibilities. So like teaching a couple courses and TAing in Queens and teaching in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, but they live in Manhattan and they got a tutoring gig, you know, in Westchester, you know,
right.
And they still take courses and they're doing field work somewhere in Harlem, you know.
Right.
So that kind of stuff, like they're good at that. But what would really start to separate you from other candidates when you go on to an academic job is your ability to show that you could really juggle a lot of scholarly responsibilities at
mm-hmm.
once. So this is something that takes a while to really figure out, but, you know, learning how to work on more than one project or topic or chapter in a dissertation or article at once is a big, big challenge that students have to learn. The earlier they learn, the better. It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So, like, if you send an article out for review, the second you send it out, you start working on another one.
Yeah.
Too many people just wait 3 months until they get it back. Then they spend 6 months revising it. A year and a half later, it's like, great, I got an article, and that's all you have. And now,
yeah.
where's the next one? So if this is something that you're interested in doing, then you always have to have, you know, a few pots on the stove.
Yeah.
And know where each one is at its level of readiness. And once one is done, then start focusing on another one right away, whatever it is. You know, even if it's just a chapter, don't rest on laurels. You know, be productive. That's what being productive really is all about. And this is not easy, is what I'm saying. But
yeah.
it's a level of, I guess, competence, you know, that students should really strive for.
Were there any other resources that you found especially useful, or that you sought out, or that you wish you'd sought out while you were a graduate student?
Well, the library was great. I always enjoyed working there. The staff was always very helpful in terms of getting what I needed,
mm-hmm.
resources and so on.
The cliche of the competitive job market, of course, is a reality, but also creates a climate of a lot of fear or uncertainty for students these days. And academia itself is changing a lot. So are there any other thoughts you have about ways students can professionalize themselves in different ways they may not expect it could be useful that for them to then show to a hiring committee when they're going on an academic job market?
Yeah, I mean, I've hinted at some of the obvious ones. Like networking and publishing, obviously, early and often, if you can. Those are big. I guess I've mentioned them, but I guess they shouldn't be understated,
mm-hmm.
because they're very valuable. The more people you can have in your corner, stronger a CV you can put out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, the better it's going to be. Dissertation topic is important. There are ways to pick a dissertation that are strategic, while also ensuring that you frame, more important, I guess, than the topic, maybe slightly more important, is also just how you frame that topic. So, you know, CUNY inspires a lot of really creative ideas out of students. I think it tolerates a lot of really interesting topics. And if you look at graduation programs and you just look at titles of dissertations and compare them to some others, you know, I think you'll see pretty broad range of interesting, cool, cutting-edge topics in CUNY that may not be, on the surface, mainstream in that discipline. But anything could be mainstream if you frame it the right way.
Right.
So I think CUNY students can't let this freedom get ahead of them, and they can't let it, you know, take them too far afield from some of the core discussions and debates and frameworks that are being used in their disciplines, because that's what will really shine a light on their work in a way that others may not have thought about before. One thing my advisor always told me is that there is that CUNY context, but there's that New York context, which, you know, the rest of this country finds strange. Not strange, it's just once you're a New York person, it's like, that's it. You know, it's like you're doing weird New York stuff, which doesn't exist anywhere else because it's such a rarefied, unique city. What are you going to do here? You know, what are you going to do in, you know, South Dakota or wherever it is? You know, that's you know, that's a little, could be a little bit of a challenge for some CUNY students to get. Yeah, if they have a really New York topic, I guess it would be, you know, a potential problem for them. Unless they really work to frame it as something that is very relevant no matter where you are, because it's dealing with some of these very central debates and these key trends and processes that are occurring in cities across the country, around the world, whatever. So
you applied to academic jobs a while ago at this point, and you got an acceptance right off the bat, so that decision wasn't hard for you.
Right.
Could you speak a bit about what were your considerations, your priorities when you went on the job market? I know this varies for all students.
Obviously, I was single at the time, so I could have gone anywhere. I didn't have any family restrictions. I was willing to go absolutely anywhere. I probably did about 30 jobs my first year. Maybe that included 5 postdocs or something like that. And I think it was a mix. Like, sociology has jobs that are like an open call, meaning no matter what you do, apply, we'll consider everybody, no matter what your subfield is, and some are very specific to subfield. So I think I applied to a mix of maybe half of those were open calls, and then the rest were probably some urban or community or qualitative methods or some type of culture, maybe type jobs or something like that. So geographically, it was pretty broad. Yeah, so when I was on the market, I was pretty much an open book. I would have gone anywhere.
And John Jay is, of course, known for criminal justice. And
yeah.
Did that fit well, or was that an adjustment to fit in with that institutional framework?
Not for me. I mean, to be honest, you'd have to ask them why they hired me, because I don't do crim at all. I'm pretty sure it's because they were expanding their liberal arts programs, and they wanted to add. They were adding majors that they had lost during the fiscal crisis in the 70s, and sociology was one of them, so they were looking to round out their department and add some folks who didn't just do crime or the law or policing or gangs or whatever, you know, those kinds of topics. I never felt any pressure to do anything other than the research I was doing. You know, that's something to keep in mind, I guess, if you go on the market and you see a school that may not seem like they're a fit, but do the research and you may find out, hey, I would be a fit here because of either some type of parallel or intersection between your work and what does go on there that you never thought about before, or because you will be that missing piece. You know, you will round out a program or a department or a curriculum that you never thought about or you don't know that they're looking for, so you never really know. I guess related to that, there's also interdisciplinary programs and departments that exist out there. So with John Jay, you know, we have a law and police science department. I don't know how many of those there are, but there's no such thing as a PhD in law and police science. That doesn't exist. That's an interdisciplinary department. So if you study the law or policing from whatever background, then that's a pretty good department for you. So there are sociologists there. There are criminal justice scholars there.
Yeah.
There are criminologists there. There are policy people there. There's psychologists there. There are forensic people there. There are former cops and former law enforcement there. So if you're someone who does research in a particular subfield that could work in one of those big tent interdisciplinary programs, like a cultural studies or a gender studies or a women's studies or a sexualities or an Africana studies or a Latin American studies or whatever, go for it, because it could work. My friends at Arizona State, and they did away with traditional disciplinary-based departments a while ago. And more places are starting to do that. So look around. You don't have to just stay in your discipline. Your work could fit someplace else, and you might be happy there.
Yeah, that's great advice. And one thing I wanted to circle back around to is you were at CUNY as a graduate student. You work at CUNY now as an associate professor. To what extent and how do you think that CUNY experience helped you in getting the job?
I think it helped me, as I mentioned, in terms of I was able to show that I can do the job. I can juggle multiple things, multiple balls at once, you know, do multiple responsibilities, that I can do it in New York City, that I can do it with a CUNY student population, which is unique in many ways. Commuter school, urban public school, mm-hmm. lots of people from underrepresented populations, mm-hmm. a lot of underprivileged folks, a lot of non-traditional students, so yeah. older students, students who work, students with kids, students who have been in school a long time, they're like in year seven or whatever, you know, I showed that I could do that, so... I think that's, you know, CUNY does hire a lot of grad center students. I mean, it doesn't seem like it, but they do compared to other programs that they take from, you know. And I think that's a big reason because CUNY students have shown that they could work within this giant behemoth we call CUNY, which right. is, you know, large and complex, but is very, you know, it's very unique. It's a very unique place. But that's something to accentuate no matter where you go. I mean, if you look at,
yeah.
you look at job ads now, they all say that we're a diverse school. You'll be entering a diverse environment and all this stuff. And they all want you to show somewhere. Maybe it's in your teaching statement. Maybe it's in some kind of separate diversity statement. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with diversity? How do you use diversity? How do you respond to the challenge of diversity? Whatever it is.
Right.
And if you're a CUNY student, then you know that inherently. You just yeah. have to figure out how to articulate it. But that could really take you a very long way mm-hmm. if you do it right. That is a piece of experience that very few students coming out of a lot of grad programs have, that CUNY students do have. Mm-hmm. They don't just have teaching experience and teaching on top of doing scholarship and research on top of doing service, but they have it in such a diverse student population as CUNY has. The onus is on you as the student, as the candidate, to translate that to other people so that they really understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, then... I think that comes across as a real strength, as a real asset. I guess, you know, use whatever resources your department has. If they don't have it, make it. Like, you got to strike while the iron is hot, or you got to learn how to strike until the iron is hot. Hmm. That's probably some advice I would have. You know, if your department doesn't have mock job talks or would do like a mock presentation, like you got on a good panel at a conference and you want to practice it, your department doesn't do that, make it. Then gather colleagues, gather friends, talk to your advisor, talk to some other faculty members, see if they would sit for 15, 20 minutes and listen to your presentation
yeah.
and give you feedback on it. Stuff like that. Be proactive would be the last bit of advice I would give. Create your own environment to succeed. In many ways, it's, you know, this is your career. No one can want it more than you, otherwise it won't work. So... you got to take initiative and put in the hours.
That's a wrap for this episode of Alumni Aloud. I'd like to thank Richard for taking the time to join us and share his advice on academic career preparation. I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us every 2 weeks throughout this academic year on Alumni Aloud. We'll be back with a fresh series of interviews with GC alumni working across academic and non-academic careers starting in September 2018. Be sure to tune in from our blog or on iTunes. Also, if you know someone who might be a good fit for an interview with us, please reach out to our office at careerplan@gc.cuny.edu. Have a great summer.